Hey y'all, Scott here. Anti-imperialism is at the center of libertarianism, as long as we keep it that way. So if you're part of a libertarian group, how about having me out to give a talk on the wars? I work cheap, and I'm good on everything. I've even been known to change a mind or two with some of these things. Check out some examples at scotthorton.org/speeches, and email scott@scotthorton.org for more information. By the way, this February 15th, the Future Freedom Foundation is having John Glazer and I give a talk at the International Students for Liberty Conference in Washington. Come on out and say hi. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And speaking of left-right libertarian realignment, I'm happy to welcome Stephen Zunis back to the show. Stephen, you are a professor of politics and coordinator of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. Welcome back.
That's correct.
I don't know why I said that to you that way. Everyone, Stephen is what I just said. And this article is at the National Catholic Reporter, The U.S. Role in Iraq's Upsurge in Violence. A great story, very well done piece here, and very timely. But, you know, first, before we get into the Iraq thing a little bit, I want to ask you about this left-right libertarian realignment. Mm-hmm. It's something that's been big in the news lately, you know, with the Edward Snowden revelations and all the controversy about that. And I know that, you know, aside from being an expert in America's horrible foreign policy, I was going to say American foreign policy, but I wanted to throw horrible in there. You also are into activism itself and strategies for making things work. And, so, you know, my idea, it's not original whatsoever, but basically it's just that where we have, say, you know, a consensus in D.C. of a liberal Republican like John McCain and a conservative Democrat like Barack Obama in the center, where, to me, they're the real extremists. They're the ones who are for everything horrible, from NSA spying and militarizing the police to the overseas empire and all the rest of that. And then on the outside of power, we have all this room for a progressive, maybe more paleo-conservative and libertarian, with the libertarians in the center, type of alliance against the war party and everything that it stands for. And, you know, it seems like, with an emphasis more on decentralizing power, but especially you know, with opposition to the empire and the atrocious, you know, destruction of the Bill of Rights going on right now as the first and foremost kind of priority. So I was wondering whether you can speak to that, whether you agree with me that that's, you know, really doable or workable, whether we maybe when we get off the topic of Iraq, you and I just have, and people as we would represent, just have too little in common on other issues, or what it is you think about that and how we might move forward if you think that there's a way to move forward.
Well, yeah, I think every successful social movement has involved groups that have been willing to come together in areas where they agree and amicably go in different directions where they disagree. And I would disagree on some libertarians and some economic issues and environmental issues and corporate power and things like that. I certainly share, for example, serious concerns about government intrusion on property rights. I certainly am concerned about getting ourselves involved in wars around the world and the incredible, you know, waste of our resources on that. I think it's interesting for a lot of people that it's important to work with people we may disagree with on some issues and issues where we come together. I mean, I'm very often attacked by members of the far left because I don't take a particular correct line on something, you know, and therefore I am the enemy. And I said, you know, no wonder the left in the United States is so marginalized when you end up attacking, you know, potential allies and getting to this kind of rigid sectarian kind of thing. So I do think that in areas of commonalities, people can come together. And I think on the very issues that you mentioned, that is about militarization and intervention and civil liberties, the various people who are often seen as being in very different places on the ideological spectrum, I think you put all of us together, we are the majority. And these are areas where I think we can we can come together and hopefully have a change of policy.
Well, and you know, the thing is too, at least from my point of view, and I guess it sounds a little bit naive, but in a way, conservatism, American conservatism, is about conserving, at its very core, is about conserving classical liberalism. It's about conserving the gains of the American Revolution and the U.S. Constitution and preventing them from being, you know, completely trampled underfoot. And so, like, if you read the American Conservative magazine, I'm not sure what percentage of the entire conservative movement that magazine really speaks for, but of course, they've got great stuff about every aspect of American foreign policy and the U.S. government's relationship to the individual.
In many ways, are the more accurate reflection of the American conservative tradition. Even though, by you know what the media and other people generally think of conservatives, you know they seem like more of an outlier group. But I think that the fact is that there's always been a contradiction between republic and empire. And in fact, that was the big thrust that we saw over 100 years ago when the United States decided to conquer the Philippines, where where you also had a mixture of people coming together. The Anti-Imperialist League was formed that included a number of folks from across the political spectrum. Included ordinary working class folks to leading intellectuals, including Mark Twain. He was their vice president, who asked this very question: what kind of nation are we? I mean, our founding revolution was against empire, so what are we doing, becoming imperial power ourselves and conquering the Philippines? Especially since it cost so many thousands of American lives and our treasury in doing so. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, part of this is because of partisan politics, stuff just always stays mixed up and messed up. But it does seem like at least when it shifts back and forth, more and more people kind of wash out of the system's view of things and start to see things more independently. You know, like, hey, geez, these conservatives, whatever happened to keep big government off your back? Now all of a sudden we got a unitary executive with plenary power and all of this stuff, you know what I mean? And liberals who, wow, I really believe in Obama for about 6 months, and then what? This guy, he's just George W. Bush. And so then it comes to the consistent, you know, whether left, right, or libertarian, but the consistent out of power who, you know, are still good on the things that our politicians betray us on, you know. It's how we win people over to this movement, I guess, you know. And that is, I don't mean the libertarian one, but I mean the movement against empire and for the Bill of Rights.
Exactly.
You know? And, you know, anyway. Well, so now here's the thing that I think especially the right has a hard time getting over, and that is that you told them so about why not to invade Iraq. And, you know, to think back to 11 years ago and the swagger and the hubris and, oh, hey, listen, for you to disagree at all is to question the might of America's military. And I know you're not calling America's military a sissy pants, are you? Well, good then. You have to support this war because our guys can do anything. And you know, any questioning of the policy is a betrayal of each and every last soldier. So how dare you? And yet here we are in 2014. And I can tell you, I walk around the house having fantasies about tying George Bush to a chair and forcing him to just watch satellite feed of the continuing unfolding consequences of his war in the Middle East as people are being butchered to death from, you know, Turkey to Yemen. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's out of control.
Yeah, very much. I mean, the upsurge of fighting in Iraq, it's people saying, oh, it's this 1,400-year-old conflict between Sunni and Shia. That's just baloney. I mean, Sunni-Shia conflicts in the Middle East until recently were as a distant memory as the religious wars of Europe between Protestants and Catholics back in the 1600s. What happened when the United States, in Iraq you had intermarriage between Sunnis and Shias. That was quite common. If there was a small town with only one mosque, Sunnis and Shias worshiped together. There's less theological differences between Sunnis and Shias than there is between Catholics and Protestants. But what happened was that when the United States came in, they ended up abolishing the Iraqi army, which is not just the top officers, many of whom were war criminals that obviously deserve to get sacked and punished or whatever, but, you know, the literally a couple million of rank and file, soldiers and junior officers who were part of an institution that was long predated Saddam. We abolished that, and it was replaced by a bunch of sectarian militias. Meanwhile, we went to the bureaucracy, the civil service, and said, okay, if you're a member of the Ba'ath Party, you can't serve. Well, to be in the civil service, you had to be in the Ba'ath Party, whether or not you supported Saddam. So basically eliminated the civil service, and government agencies were replaced by, and this essentially became fiefdoms of various sectarian groups. And meanwhile, in getting the coalition government, the United States, you know, chose people based on their ethnic sectarian identification and kind of a divide-and-rule strategy like the French did in, colonial French did in Lebanon with similar results. And in a sense, and so meanwhile, because Saddam was so good at oppressing everybody, the only institutions that could survive were those related to the Shia clerics. Now, one of the differences there are between Sunnis and Shias is that the Shias have a clear hierarchy. Ayatollah is sort of the equivalent of cardinals in the Catholic Church, and like cardinals and archbishops, they have a whole network of houses of worship and seminaries and hospitals and schools and things under their tutelage. So they could mobilize their folks where other elements of civil society could not. And so, no big surprise, they ended up winning the election, especially when U.S. suppression in the Sunni heartland ended up having the Sunnis boycott. So what happens is
Slow down for just a second. We're gonna have a whole other segment. I want to let you tell the whole story here, but I want to make sure that people keep up that what happened was these Republicans came in, they abolished the entire state of Iraq, and then they didn't know, they had their plan to replace it, but when the Ayatollah said, hey, everybody, every Shiite Arab, if you believe in God, I want you to go outside and demand one man, one vote. They did, all of them. And the threat was, you'll have to start this war all over again against the people who stood by and cheered as you overthrew Saddam. So you don't want that, do you? And so, in other words, these Republicans had no idea what they were doing. They went and invaded this country, and if they had a plan, it was to let everything go to hell, and that worked. But I don't even think they were planning that well.
Yeah, apparently George Bush didn't even know the difference between Sunni and Shia until 3 weeks before the invasion. So the crazy thing is that the two parties that have ended up dominating the country ever since, the Dawa and the Supreme Council of the Iraqi Revolution, Islamic Revolution in Iraq, spent their exile years in Iran.
Right. Dawa, now hold it right there. Let everybody chew on that during this very short commercial break. We'll be right back with Stephen Zunis. The article is The U.S. Role in Iraq's Upsurge in Violence. It's at ncronline.com, the National Catholic Report. It's really good. Go check it out. We'll be right back after this. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Talking with Stephen Zunis. This article, his latest in the National Catholic Reporter, is called The U.S. Role in Iraq's Upsurge in Violence. And, well, that's the headline, but it's, you know, the story of how the U.S. invasion of 2003 just sowed widespread chaos. It's the story of since then, what happened, how it happened. And it's really good. And where we left off, the American neoconservatives had no idea what the hell they were doing, and neither did their dear leader. And they blundered into this thing. And then by January 2005, the Dawa Party, the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, sorry, there was supposed to be an and between those, who had been exiled in Iran for 30 years since Jimmy Carter had Saddam invade them in the first place, had Saddam invade them in the first place. These were the Iraqi traitors. These were the guys who came in on the heels of the invasion and that the Americans put in power. And so then that brings us up to 2005. And then, so, gee, what was it that got hundreds of thousands of people killed after that, Stephen?
Yeah, well, it was a number of things. You know, one was that for many Sunni Iraqis, they saw, wow, we have a government now that's made up of our two historic enemies, the Persians, the Iranians, and the West imperialists, the United States and Britain. And so there are some extremists among them who then started, since the Shia population elected these guys, they're at fault. And so some of the extremists, the al-Qaeda types, ended up sending up bombs and attacking the Shia civilians. And then in retaliation, the U.S.-backed government in the manner of El Salvador in the 80s sent out these death squads and started massacring random Sunni men. And so then people who were not sectarian-oriented ended up embracing some of these militias in self-defense because, the government and the U.S. Troops weren't protecting them. And the thing just kind of spiraled out of control. So in other words, it's not that they're fighting over their sectarian differences. And it's kind of like the Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland. They weren't fighting each other because they were about religion, per se. It was that the Catholics, for various historical reasons, identified as Irish nationalists, and the Protestants, for various historical reasons, identified as British unionists. But that didn't stop extremists on both sides from planting bombs in the pubs that were frequented by the other.
Right.
And this is kind of what happened in Iraq. And then, of course,
let me stop you there just to emphasize how important that is, that, this theory that it's supposedly, nobody ever proved it, but it's just the assumption underlying so much of the debate about what goes on in the Middle East is that, well, as long as the Shia and the Sunni believe different from each other, they're just going to always keep killing each other over the differences in their beliefs, when that's not what it is. It's just factions defined by religious belief at war. And so these things, it's always human politics, land and money and power and influence, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a classic divide and rule. And of course, those of us who opposed the invasions warned this could provoke sectarian conflict. It was a sectarian conflict that then gave the Bush administration the excuse to keep troops in and actually increase troops there. Of course, that gave even more support to the various sectarian militias. Now, what's happened more recently is that U.S.-backed Shia sectarian government, despite being sort of elected, is incredibly corrupt and autocratic. I mean, they routinely massacre civilians. In fact, interesting little backstory here. What motivated Bradley Manning to release to do his WikiLeaks things was when he was ordered to be part of to support this operation where the U.S. would help the Iraqi police or Iraqi death squad basically kill a couple journalists who were exposing corruption on the part of the government. And he was saying, hey, is this really the thing that U.S. troops should be engaged in? And he was told to shut up about it. And that's what really finally motivated him to upload all the material and the rest of history. But this is the kind of thing that this government's been continuing to do when they had pro-democracy protests, when they had anti-corruption protests. People have been shot and beaten. The offensive by al-Qaeda, which took over parts of Ramadi and still control a good chunk of Fallujah, happened right after the Iraqi police and armed forces violently broke up a peaceful protest encampment, killing a number of people. And this is like the fifth such nonviolent encampment that the regime has attacked and killed people in. And so they're saying, and of course that gave emphasis to saying, see, the government is just kills. If you're peaceful, you have to pick up arms, da da da. And now, of course, the United States is using this as an excuse to increase our military aid to the repressive Baghdad regime. And, and the cycle continues.
Yeah, well, and they're even going, probably already they're there training Iraqi soldiers in Jordan, they say, which at least in Jordan But man, here we go again. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Saddam's thing was incredibly brutal and repressive. But you know, he was pretty much an equal opportunity oppressor, at least among the Arab population. And again, the sectarian thing is not something in our Iraq history. This is very much an outgrowth of U.S. policy.
They might remember, and it might bother them, that they told us for a year straight, look, we want a regime change, and here's a bunch of excuses, most of them scary weapons that could poison or blow you out to death, and so you have to let us do this. It's an emergency. It's the greatest threat on the face of the planet. He could give these weapons to terrorists. And then after 2 days in Iraq, they says, oh yeah, no, the reason we're doing this is because Saddam's a torturer and we're liberating the people of Iraq. And then they got how many hundreds of thousands? Somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million people killed, somewhere right around in there, give or take the remainder, because nobody really knows or knows how to count that many dead people. And all to what? Give them a regime of torturers. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. On the one hand, you know, if I was living in Fallujah and the black flag of Al-Qaeda was flying in my neighborhood and those guys were enforcing these draconian laws, you know, I'd want to be liberated. But on the other hand, we've seen how regimes like that of Iraq and have liberated cities, usually by bombing the bejesus out of entire neighborhoods.
Well, that's what's going on right now.
They made in USA on all the bomb casings and everything else, and they'll just encourage, you know, more radicalism and extremism.
Right. I mean, at antiwar.com right now, it says news.antiwar.com, Iraq pounds Fallujah with airstrikes, artillery. Well, yeah, that's a good way to hunt down Al-Qaeda, huh?
Yeah, really. In Fallujah, you know, and one reason the two U.S. assaults in that city were so tragic is that it is, in Iraqi history, it has a strong symbolic importance as a sort of a coming together of the various tribes, of a sense of national identity and the like, and to have that kind of assault on a regime that most people, at least in that part of Iraq, see as illegitimate, and again backed by the United States, it's just going to harden attitudes. It's going to make things worse.
Is it too soon to question whether Eastern Iraq, Western Anbar Province, Iraq, will end up just combining with rebel parts of Syria, and we'll have a new Islamo-fascist caliphate there, just like George Bush always wanted, or always pretended he was defending us from?
Yeah, I think most Sunni Arabs, even those who are devoutly religious and even those who are very much opposed to the regime and to U.S. policies, don't identify with Al-Qaeda because these guys are just, again, too extreme, too hardcore, you know, apocalyptic in their ideology and genocidal in their methods.
The government of Baghdad isn't really the government of the Anbar province, is it? It's just sort of
looking at it. Very few people identify and support it, and all the deals that they made that say, if you lay down your arms and cooperate with us, the Americans, we'll give you a role in government, we'll give you jobs, and incorporate you into the army. They fulfilled a few of those things, but most of it they had not. And so the tribes there are quite bitter. Meanwhile, you have this porous border with Syria, and in fact, we're really freaked out, saying, "Oh, we must arm the moderate opposition in Syria to counter the extremist opposition." Well, how did that extremist come about? They're a direct outgrowth of the extremists that were not extremists in Iraq, which were not did not exist until the U.S. ended up invading and occupying that country. There would not be such a disproportionate amount of a hardline extremist among the Syrian opposition, again, if it weren't for the training and organization and everything that that grew out of the U.S. occupation, because for a lot of people in the Middle East, but especially these hardline Islamists, they don't recognize these artificial colonial borders that demarcates Iraq and Syria. Those were drawn by the British and French. That had nothing to do with them or their culture or whatever. So, you know, if they're fighting what they see as an illegitimate government, Damascus or Baghdad, doesn't matter to them. So, you know, it's all one struggle to them. Most of the faults of the horrible things going on in Syria is the Assad regime itself. Here too, I think you can make a case that the United States has has contributed to the carnage and to why it's become such a magnet of the extremists.
And I got the idea that you and I are going to be talking about the consequences of the Iraq War as they play out for years to come, too, Stephen. It's hardly over yet, but we're all out of time. Thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
All right, that is Stephen Zunis from the University of San Francisco. His article at the National Catholic Reporter is The U.S. Role in Iraq's Upsurge in Violence. Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey guys, I got his laptop.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it easy and 100% anonymous. Just deposit the money into their account at any Bank of America, Wells Fargo, or credit union with shared branching, and then just email them a picture of the receipt with your Bitcoin address and you get your Bitcoins. A simple, clean, anonymous way to get Bitcoins. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here. So you made a little bit of money in this horrid economy only to find that the Fed has more or less outlawed saving. So into the treacherous waters of the stock market bubble you go. But how to make a little money without too much risk of losing it all? Check out WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who opens a very real window into his main account, updating his subscribers on the facts of and the reasoning behind all his market moves. Follow along on paper or with real money and see what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.